What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we have a drummer and I'd say a man of many, quite the resume. I did my reading, and he's been around. So we have Jason Sutter. How are you, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you've been keeping busy?
You know, it's been an interesting journey. I'll say yes, but it's definitely been, since COVID, man, it's a whole different thing. You know, it's been crazy.
Yeah. In what way? Like, what's different now than it was back then? I mean, that's probably a huge, broad statement.
I think for everybody, no matter what you do, you know, everything is, it's safe to say, you know, just the way promoters work, the way, you know, gas prices, airline tickets, you know, just general audiences, you know, and I think it's a different world. Like, the music industry was already in transition, because of, for obvious reasons, things like Spotify and whatever. But so there were, you know, there were shifts that were changing. I could never complain, man. You know, I'm so lucky. And when I moved to LA, I got like five numbers of different drummers, you know, guys, you know, you've heard of old school cats that my teacher from upstate New York gave me, that he knew of. And he said, call these guys. And a bunch of them said the same thing. They said, oh, man, you missed out. I got here in 2000 and, in LA, and they were like, oh, you missed out, man. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, so much more happening or whatever. They all had different things. And, you know, so I think we, if you're really into this, you adapt and you make it work, you know, but I think the industry has shrunk even more. It was shrinking because of the free, you know, music and free everything with the, and social media and whatever, but it just seems like it's just getting smaller and, you know, but like I said, we adapt and, I can't complain at all, man. You know, I've been able to work a lot, man, more, you know, four times what I ever thought I would be able to do in my little brain when I was young, you know, setting out on this. So all good.
Yeah, right on. So when that was, like, I guess when COVID was at its height, what I hear a lot from artists is that obviously it sucks. It was a pandemic, you know, but like, and, you know, shows were canceled, everything. Were you able to like find other avenues that you could like put your art into? Like, I know some guys would do like virtual, like in your case, like a drum lesson kind of service or stuff like that. Were you able to kind of put your, like, I guess your talents into other ways of like making revenue and everything?
I mean, I was, you know, I'm a collector, you know, mm-hmm. antique, vintage, you name it, from clothes to shoes to shirts. You know, I have like enough rock vintage shirts from the 70s and 80s that could probably go, you know, go to the ceiling, you know, of just like, I got so much of that. So, you know, I had a lot of that stuff that I actually got rid of a lot of because I've just been collecting it over the years, over 30 years. My dad was an antique collector. So I've collected a lot of different stuff. So I, you know, I would move different pieces of art, you know, mm-hmm. or photography, or that's another thing I do, you know. So that was kind of something kind of fun. So during the pandemic, there was a lot of people moving, you know, gear, either rare instruments or rare pieces of art, which I enjoy, you know, and so kind of did that. But I did teach some lessons. I did, you know, what we could. And in some cases, you know, I got to say in that situation, I kind of used the, like, if you're the fish in the net, man, you know, eventually stop struggling, man. You know what I mean? Just wait it out and you'll be okay. You know, and a famous drummer who just played recently with Abel Arboreal Senior, bass player, the great drummer, Jim Keltner, reading a quote, he said, enjoy the downtime, you know, if you've been busy, enjoy the downtime, man, you know. And it's one of the best things I ever heard, and it's words to live by, because, you know, it's easy to be that fish in the net and try to just drive yourself nuts when you're not working. And this business goes up and down. It just does, man. You got to be cool with it. I got to remind myself of that. Because I tend to be like, after every cool tour I do, I'm like, okay, I need to become a lawyer or a dentist or change my profession, you know? And it's like, you know, it doesn't work that way. You might work a lot one year and you may not work the next year. And I got to be honest, man. Like I said, you know, it's like, sometimes, you know, you just got to stick it. You got to stick around, you know, you got to stay in this business, and I could never look back and say, oh, it was so much better before the COVID.
Yeah, right.
Everything changes, man, you know, and the more you stick around. So, yeah. But anyway, I enjoyed the downtime. I tried to just go like, okay, cool. I'll practice. I'll work on my house. I'll paint the shutters, you know, whatever. I'll work on my car. I'll find somewhere else to go. I've got a lot of other interests. And, you know, it's a chance. Like Keltner said, I was a lot really busy before that just came to a screeching halt. So it gives me a chance to kind of take a break, which I wouldn't normally be able to do. You know, I wouldn't normally be able to have that that luxury, if that makes sense. So yeah. I don't know if that answers your question, but
and it's great that like I was figuring that, because like I know it was a terrible time for artists for sure, but like. Like I do hear that a lot. Like they, in a weird way, enjoyed the downtime because, like you know, some of them may have families. Some of them, you know, just stuff they could take care of stuff they wouldn't be able to if they're out touring and stuff. So, well, it's good to know that you kept yourself busy too. And And going off that, I did when I was doing some research on you and just kind of looking, you know, reading up on you. Man, I couldn't even keep track of all the stuff you've done. And And there was one thing I wanted to ask that was really interesting to me. Can you explain how you worked with the Rock of Ages thing? Was it a Broadway musical, or how'd that start?
You know, it's the weirdest thing ever. And honestly, dude, I did not even put that on my resume until recently. You know, it's like so weird. Like I didn't even think about it. You know.
Yeah.
But I just finished touring with the band American Hi-Fi. Drums with them, Stacy and Jamie in that band and Drew were all really good buddies of mine. And we finished a tour all over Japan and England and then the US with Bowling for Soup and Butch Walker. It was like that era, 2004 or 2005.
Sure.
And so I got back, I think it was late summer, and I got a call from a dear friend of mine, Dave Gibbs, who's a great bass player, plays with Tom Morello. Went to high school together. He's a few years older. Actually played in Greece in high school together.
Wow.
So, drums at our senior, and Dave came back and played guitar because he was the only guy who could read music. So he came back while he was in town and worked for our senior musical of Greece, right?
Yeah.
Funny. And, so Dave reached out to me, and we've done a bunch of other things. We worked on Josie and the Pussycats, that movie. We wrote music for that and recorded for that. And so Dave called me, and Dave and I work really good, just the two of us together. Dave, by the way, a little plug, and I'm in part of Dave's, the main owner of this wine bar called Mirabelle, which is in Studio City, North Hollywood in LA. Great restaurant and wine bar that I got involved with Dave. Maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, but, Dave's a wine guy. And so I got involved with him with this, but that's years later. Before that, Dave reached out and he said, listen, there's this musical, it's rock and roll. And basically what we're going to do is we're going to go to there's a famous bar, old bar on Hollywood Boulevard called King King. And it's still there. I don't know if it's open, but it's the building, the structure is there. And so is the name, but I don't know if they've been open for a while, but it's a big square bar.
Yeah.
From, you know, I don't know, 40s, 50s, 60s, it's been there for a long time. So anyway, we put together a 1 hour, what they call preview. So basically a preview is for in the business of theater is basically you put together a quick beginning, quick middle, quick ending, and then you basically sorry, I got the light here, but I hope that's okay.
You're fine. Yeah, but
basically what it is you do an hour performance, and all these producers come in and see it, so they get a quick taste of what it is, because normally a Broadway show is an hour, an intermission, an hour, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
2 hour production, 2 hour plus, or maybe 45, whatever each, but it's, you know, maybe it's an hour and a half, but it's two parts, right? So they brought in, Dave and I went in, and we basically started from nothing. We started from just me and Dave, and we would take songs like, I don't know, like Heat of the Moment and mash it together with, you know, the song Harden My Heart. And then we would would take another thing and we would cut them together and we would record it together at a studio called Studio City Sound. And then we would drive them over with a rough recording and play them for the choreographer who was there with all these dancers and actors. And they would be like, that's perfect. Or, hey, can you cut that end off? And we're going to, and then we go back to the studio and we cut it and run back. And it was just me and Dave, you know, and then Dave would bass line and sing some scratch vocals over it because Dave could sing. And I would just be there ready to go. We try, you know, edit it, or we'd go back to the studio and they'd edit it at the board. And then we bring it back to the dancers. So it was literally happening in real time. And then once we got the, you know, basically the songs and the arrangements, which are basically cover songs. It's all cover, you know, Heat of the Moment, Don't Stop Believing by Journey, Damn Yankees, you know, a million tunes. Anyway, we would, our job was to cut and paste those tunes together so that they went along with the dialogue, you know, that was going on certain features. So we did that, went to a rehearsal room. Once we liked the arrangements and got them down for the dancers who were working away down the street. And then we got a band together of great dudes, a couple guys from American Hi-Fi, I think. And we rehearsed and we got that together. Then we brought in the singers, they rehearsed, and then they had their, you know, the dialogue and the, you know, the blocking for the theater, this mini theater in a bar. They built a stage band on the stage. You know, and the show, we did this hour long preview. All these producers came from Vegas and New York and whatever, and they gave money and they said, let's do it. And then after that, we did a run of like 3 months of full production in a giant place that probably seated maybe, I don't know, 1,000 to 1,500 people, a lot of people.
Wow.
And yeah, like a big hall on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. And it was sold out, every show, sold out, sold out, sold out. We even did matinees on a couple of days. And this was just kind of getting this going. And every night was like celebrities were there, you know, rock stars, and from the music we were playing. And it's funny, I remember like a couple different people, like one of the girls who was like an interviewer, and then she had another role as a singer, was Catherine McPhee.
Yeah, from American Idol?
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, she was baby, she was like 21 and still kind of had like baby fat, you know, and she was so cute and tall and really talented, but she wasn't, you know. And I remember a couple of years later after that ended, I remember my mom was watching American Idol or whatever it was, and I was like, went into like, she used to live down the street, and I went by to see her, and I was like, that's homegirl, you know. So you know, Kyle Gass, the part of Tenacious D, was played the theater owner, had a whole feature. Who else? Chris Hardwick, you know, from the Nerd, whatever it's called, nerd.com or whatever. And then he was a comedian. And yeah, he's played Stacey Jacks, the first the rock star of the thing. Yeah. Amazing. So there were a bunch of kind of famous people kind of on their way up, and a bunch of theater were famous who got involved in it, who had been in other big shows. So it was a really cool high end quality production, and it sold out. And this was 2005. 2006, right as I was coming off the road doing some work, but I was like, you know, I was doing this show. The whole point was to sell it to Vegas and then ultimately go to New York, but they never dreamt it would go on Broadway ever.
Yeah.
You know, think, but they maybe down the road. But Vegas, you know, at the time, this 2005, 2006 was not cool yet. Vegas is really cool now. Vegas was not cool. If people don't know that, Vegas was really not a cool place to play or be. It was kind of, if you were playing shows there, it was kind of like you were, you know, and when you come through in a rock band, it'd be like, oh man, we're playing Vegas. Can't wait to get horrible. It was not happening. Now Vegas is killing and people are fighting to play in Vegas. And I got to play there with Cher at like, I think the real peak with her starting in 2017. It was amazing. So Vegas now is red hot, you know, but then it wasn't. And the long story short is basically while we were up, the reason it was so popular is Rock Band, you know, that game.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it brought rock and roll back to families all across America and the world. Like they were suddenly getting hip to Foreigner and, you know, all these rock bands, you know, and the little kids suddenly went like, wow, I like that. And their parents were like, yeah, we like that too. And all of a sudden there was this huge thing, I think really saved rock and roll, gave rock and roll another last run. And then bands like Foreigner, who hadn't been out on the road, all of a sudden had this need to kind of get back together. And then those tours exploded, you know?
Yeah.
Styx and Journey had already been out on the road, but you know, a lot of other bands followed, like Kansas and Styx and Foreigner and all these bands got back together and are still playing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because,
and that really helped fuel this, like, it was the beginning of the resurgence of the Sunset Strip hair band, groupie, rock and roll. And man, everybody got up and it was like so rock and roll, the chicks and the clothes and the outfits. It was like they couldn't wait to have their 80s back. So yeah. It was a really fun time. It was exciting. And but I didn't want to do that. You know what I mean? I was doing that with Dave, and it was fun. It was perfect timing coming off the road with Hi-Fi, walking right into this great project, starting from the ground up and turning it into this really cool production. It was like lines down the street. We were rock stars. And the band was on the stage. You know, they were playing. We were on the stage, and my clothing was like some like makeup, and like a girl would kiss me, and then like my hair all teased up, and I was like shirtless, and I had like bands around my arms, and that was my outfit for the show. Rock and roll, I had a double bass drum set, which at the time was like laughable. Now double bass drum sets again, but at the time it was not. It was all kitschy, you know. It was a lot of fun, and so anyway, during that time, I gotten a call for an audition for. Actually, I called it for the gig for the Rembrandts.
Yeah.
The band the Rembrandts, who were just finishing the end of Friends. Friends had ended. They were going to go on a tour and do this thing. So a friend had called my friend Kay Hanley, who was in the band called Letters to Cleo years back that I worked with too. And they said, one of the guys, Danny, called her and said, hey, we need a drummer. Who do you recommend? She gave my name, and I just got to call and went and played with them. And it was amazing. They're amazing. Yeah. Super cool, super rock and roll, super punk rock. A lot of people don't know this, but like Phil, the other guy, the two guys, Phil and Danny. Phil used to like teach like Randy Rhoads guitar, you know what I mean? Like,
oh wow,
they're really cool. So that was a great experience, but it was really short lived. It was only a couple months, and during that time, through a series of events, I got a call that Smash Mouth was auditioning drummers. I went to the audition. I kind of slid in. That's a whole other story I can tell you about. But one of those cool back when it was like a cattle call, like they had put out like thousands of
people. Oh, okay.
And then they whittled it down to like 15 or 20 guys who came to LA, and they were going to start the auditions on Monday. And then on Thursday, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then on Friday, they were going to have callbacks, which would be like 3 to 5 guys. And then they would decide. And there was, for some reason, I was supposed to be in on that first run, but I wasn't. And I called like literally the Sunday before that Monday. And the guy was like, they never called you. You got an audition. So they ended up sliding me onto the Friday of callback. So they bought it out for the week. And then I just came in and auditioned with like 4 or 5 guys that were scheduled for the callbacks after them having rehearsed, you know, gone through Monday, Tuesday, of these 15 or 20 guys. Those don't happen hardly at all anymore. You know what I mean? Most of the games we got were like gladiators. Like you go into a room and you show up and you play along to the song and you hope the bass player likes you and you hope the singer can relate. You hope you're wearing the right shoes. Hope they way to like something to like break the ice and talk to them. And get like, you might get one song. And if they like it, you might get 2. And if they like it, you get 3. And if they really like it, you know, they get offer you the gig, which they did. To me,
nice.
On the spot. I was the first guy of the callbacks, and there are a couple friends of mine who also were there, who we joke about it. A couple of guys in Nashville, and then there's another dude who lives out here who also plays with them. But the joke was that I went in for the callback or before all the callback guys, and they were like, tell the callback guys to go home.
Oh, wow.
Weird. I'd never had that happen. And they joked. You know, and it's sad because I ended up playing with them for a year, and it was an amazing year. But then I got the Chris Cornell gig, and it was like I realized, as much as I liked Smash Mouth, and they're one of the best live bands I've ever played in. It was clear to me that they didn't have the work ethic that they maybe used. They weren't going to go to Europe. They didn't want to work a lot.
Yeah.
They didn't have it all as together as much as they could have. If they could have done whatever they wanted, they could have, you know, you could tell they had their peak, and they had the interband, you know, things. So when Cornell came calling, I jumped, but I jumped in good terms, and close this really quick and see if that'll help with the explaining. But I left on good terms, so I ended up coming back years later. They called me a thing years later. Is that, that's not better.
It don't look too bad either way, man. I don't know how it is on your end, but.
No, it's okay. I just, you know, instead of having stripes all over me, but whatever.
You're good.
LA, man, you know, it's sunny. What can I say? So I got the offer for Smash Mouth shortly after that. And I left Rock of Ages. And that's what happened. I got a buddy down the street to sub. And then the gig just kept coming and going, you know, coming. And I ended up getting that gig by accident, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I got to go. They went to Rock of Ages, went to Vegas, died a horrible death.
Oh, Vegas, no.
Well, nobody got it. You know, The crowd wasn't, it was like really theatery and tongue in cheek, like comedy, like theater references and shit. And that just like went over middle America and Vegas's head. Nobody got it. A lot of Hollywood references. They didn't get it. And then it went to off Broadway about 3 years later and just kind of bubbled under and had about three or 4 years. I don't know the timeline exactly. And then I'm literally on tour with Chris Cornell in New York City at the Dream Hotel in Times Square, right near Broadway. And Dave Gibbs calls me and he goes, dude, where are you right now? And this is at like 4 p.m. I said, dude, I'm in New York. He's like, you're kidding. He said, tonight is opening night for Rock of Ages on Broadway. He's like,
oh, wow.
Get here. And I'm like, I'm off. And I literally, dude, this is not a joke. I looked up where it was, the theater, and I walked out of my hotel, down the street, down, and walked right in. There was Dave. There was this Janet Billy, who's a famous manager, managed Nirvana and worked at a rock band I was in called Jack Drag, who I love, who also was a big part of the beginning of all this. So it's a big family. And
yeah.
I sit down between Janet and Dave, and the curtain opens, dude, and I watch the first Rock of Ages performance on Broadway. Nuts, dude. So that's kind of the full story. But and then it lasted on Broadway for 6 years and was huge. And they sold merch. And then the bands went on the road and they had like two touring bands. And then, you know, then they have it in Canada or in Europe and they have it on cruise ships. And I was literally doing a drum lecture at a college in El Paso at UTEP. Mm-hmm. And their performance that spring was Rock of Ages. Like the theater, I was just like, oh my God, what's going on? Like, this is so weird. So kind of fun, you know, but that's the Rock of Ages story. And like I said, I forgot all about it. And only recently, about 5 years ago, put it on my resume. Like, oh yeah, I did that. I did. You
know? Yeah. And did it not become a movie? Like, that's how I heard of it.
Movie. I watched the movie in Paris. I was on tour with, I think, Marilyn Manson.
Okay.
I was at a night off and it was in Paris and I went to the theater and watched it opening night in France.
Damn.
But, you know.
Yeah. And that's it.
Movie wasn't great, but this is a true story too. I got called to play drums in it. And,
oh, wow.
I got called to play drums in it. And because they wanted the original Arsenal was the band we were called, you know? So Tom Cruise is in there and he wants the original band if he can get it, right? He's really going big. He wants the original band from the original cast of the Arsenal, right? That everybody talks about, you know, like everybody in the theater, in the production was just kept talking about the original group, which was us that started the whole thing. And long story short, I get a phone call from Tom Cruise. And he calls and he's like, hey, man, he's like in character. He's like, are you my drummer, man? Are you down and do this, man? And it was with Dave. And I was like, or somebody I knew, I forget who, it was like 2010 and or 9. And I was like, yeah. And then it ended up that I got the gig with the New York Dolls to go out with Motley Crue and Poison, you know, opening for 3 months. All summer because the great drummer Mulaney's wife was going to have a baby. He was doing that gig. We went to North Texas College together. And I always told him, I said, if that gig ever, you can't ever do a tour, call me. They're my favorite band in the world. And they're better. If you know, they were better than they ever were. They're better than the Rolling Stones. They're like incredible at the time. I know that's a crazy quote, but they sounded like Rolling Stones live at that time, you know, 2007 to 9, that new band. So I was just nuts. I caught every show and I just said, and so he called me to do that. And so it was like, you know, make a movie where I pretend to play drums in this movie, or you know, do this, or do I go and play with the New York Dolls, where I'm actually playing with legends, and they're out with this huge tour, which is also part of that Rock Band thing, this phenomenon of like families and their kids, and it was like these outdoor sheds, and Motley Crue and Poison had never toured together, and there'd be no Motley Crue and there'd be no Poison if it wasn't for the New York Dolls.
Sure.
So I got to do that tour, and so I basically opted out of the movie, which ended up being kind of good. Anyway,
yeah.
It wasn't nearly as good as it could have been, and I don't know how they screwed that up, because it would have been easy to get the right people to say, no, don't do that, do this. And
because
that's who was – they just didn't get the people – I think the people who were involved in the Broadway show kind of got pushed out once Hollywood came in, which is the biggest mistake they could have made, because I was rooting for him, man. But anyway – it's funny, but yeah, that's what happened. So,
man, that's an insane story, dude. it sounds like everything kind of just like all came together, like perfect timing with your like career, like touring with bands, and also you have this going on, and it just sounds like you lived a busy life, man. And I
will say it's insane. It's insane. No one is more. I always say no one is more surprised than I have been with this. You know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I liken it, and I said this before, but I liken it to like, you're like the career is like swinging through the jungle on a vine, like Tarzan, you know, and that vine is your gig. And you're swinging out, and all you need is one other vine. You don't need eight vines. You just need one to grab. And you grab, and luckily I just kept reaching out, and there's another vine. And it was like incredible. And some people get like a vine and they swing and there's no other vine there ever again. But at least they have one vine, you know, like, you know, you got to be thankful. There's a million great gigs and there's a million great musicians. So I've been so spoiled. I mean, seriously, it was like 15 years of nonstop and then COVID, you know what I mean? And COVID would have been my craziest year ever, you know, like I was on the road with Cher. We were in Oklahoma City, which is ground zero.
Okay? Yeah.
We were in the same hotel with Homeboy, who grabbed all the mics back. Ball dude.
Oh,
we were in that hotel with them.
No,
and we were playing that venue the next night, dude. We were in that town the night early. We're always there a night early, and the band, half the band went to go see the game, and we had heard there were grumblings of this COVID thing, but and like Avril Lavigne just canceled, you know, her tour, and like the Aerosmith was like camp. I was talking to them, and they were saying they were going to cancel, and it was just like, wow, weird. And I just booked like a crazy tour for the summer. I was going to sub that I really probably can't say who it was, but it was huge. And I just gotten the gig with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and they were going to do a third band. That was the fall. And then Cher was going to go back out again after this huge band I was going to tour with in the summer before. So it had been Cher, huge band, Cher, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, third band. And all done. Signed, we're good. And literally COVID hit and everything went away, you know. And we were on tour, you know, with Cher. We would have gone, you know, for another 2 or 3 months, and it was just heartbreaking, really. But obviously there are so many other people that, like, at least I had been working with Cher for 3 solid years up to that point.
Yeah,
there were, you know, in this business, like I said, some friends of mine who worked a lot, they were enjoying their downtime, and then COVID came, and now they have another, you know. And if we were to go out with Cher, it was March. Now it'd be 4 years, and she's doing all kinds of other stuff. I hope she works again soon. That's, you know, I'm waiting for that call, because she could still do it, and hopefully will. But
yeah,
I can't for sure. But it's crazy to think about, dude. It'll be 4 years the next time if I were to play with her again. It would be 4 years as of right now since we were on. But yeah, the coincidence of literally we're at ground zero. When that dude touched the mics and they canceled all the NBA within hours of him getting COVID, they canceled the game. We were there, man, in that hotel with them.
God, man. That's nuts. But like, and like, you kind of, what you just said about you getting that call, right? So how does that, as, and first off, is a good term for like the what you do, is it, would it be like freelance drumming?
Yeah, that's what I call it.
Okay. So when you like get that call, is it as simple as that? Like you're just waiting to know if you're going to go another year, like with Cher, or like, do you have like contracts? Like, how does it work as a freelance drummer when a band comes calling you?
Country guys, you know, they play with the same dudes who have like literally 1,000 people every day writing a song for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're going to have a hit. It's going to happen. You know, if you get that past that first hump, you know, you can have like a country hit, I'm told. Don't quote me. I don't know what I'm talking about with country. So guy, you know, like Kevin Murphy or Travis McNabb or Rich Redmond or Jim Riley, one of those guys who I love, all of which, and went to college with a couple of those guys. And I went to rock school with the other ones. We were on tour together and all these other things. But I love all those guys. But I believe what happens there is, so those guys, once you get past a certain point, you're just going to keep going. You know,
mm-hmm.
For me, I'm swinging on that vine. You know what I mean? I'm hunting, yep. I'm hunting for my food.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have to wake up every day and hunt for my food as a freelance musician. But the beauty of it is you get to eat a bunch of different kinds of food. You know?
Yeah.
Rather than somebody who has a steady gig and they wake up and they eat chicken every day or they eat steak every day. It's steak, but you're eating the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Nothing any of that, dude. And trust me, as I get older, the more I'd like to eat steak every day and not go hungry. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
But you know, it's like, it's that thing. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. It's crazy to do what I, that, you know, and yeah. So far so good, but you know, I'm also looking around going like, how long is this going to last? And you know, how long do I, when is the next big tour? But you know, since COVID's happened, I've gone on tour twice with Joe Perry Project.
Mm.
Incredible, gone to Brazil, gone all over the America. He's on fire. Sounds like Jimi Hendrix, you know, times five, you know,
yeah.
Crushing, you know, and getting to play with all the guys in that band are amazing. And I do the Trans-Siberian thing now as like a alternate, you know, so moving towards hopefully one day doing that when they do a third band. So, you know, it's, you know, it's not been famine, but it's not as much as it was. But again, like I said, you know, I'm pretty active doing all kinds of other stuff. You know, I do have a couple houses, you know,
mm-hmm.
One's a rental and then, you know, a couple rentals and then that, this house, and houses require a lot of stuff that I like to do it myself. You know, I yeah. like it. So I strip the paint, I re-coat the deck, you know, I do all that stuff, you mm-hmm. know? So, and everything interior, I'm going to put a new sink in pretty soon. You know? The point is like, I like to do that. So that gives me a chance. That's the stuff I wouldn't be able to do if I wasn't here. You know what I mean? So it gives me a chance to kind of do all that stuff and hopefully prepare for some other tour that comes down the road. But yeah, basically with a Cher thing and those country gigs, like what you were asking, you get a contract usually with Cher or say the Rascal Flatts or one of those big country acts where here's your schedule for the year.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing this, we're off for these 3 months, then we're going here and doing this, then we're doing this, then we're off, right?
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I've had that maybe with Cher all 3 years that we worked like crazy. I had that. And it was amazing. But most gigs, you do not get that. You go out, Man. You cross your fingers, you hope you get to keep going. The Dolls went out. We did 3 months with Motley Crue and Poison the whole summer. And then it worked out where they called me to do a Halloween run in Europe with Alice Cooper with Dolls. Nuts. And I got to do that. And that turned out it was the final show the New York Dolls ever played together, was in Halloween night in Glasgow after being there. You know, so just crazy, man. I couldn't, you know. But I look at all these things that once I get this tour and I go do it, and it's like, you know, and I, you know, I get to do like anything after that first tour is gravy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like Cornell went out and we went for 9 months straight the first year, 2007, you know?
Yep.
We didn't stop. And then next year, we didn't stop. We went all over Europe, toured with Lee Park, went to Australia, you know, all over Europe. Like we lived in Europe, you mm-hmm. know? And then we you know, did it again in 2009, you know. So that was all gravy. It was just like, oh, my God, this is so amazing to get. You don't get – usually a tour, you just don't get to work that much, you know. And yeah. When I was with Manson, he did like 2 years straight for him. And it was some crazy number of shows and all over the world. I'm like Russia, and like the Ukraine before you could never go back now, and you could, I would never go to Russia, Ukraine now. Right. Same, you know, we played everywhere. And I believe he went back to Russia well before all this COVID and everything. And they came back and it was like a weirder, there were like bomb threats for his shows and things. When we went there, we went back, we toured a bunch in the summer, and then we toured a bunch in the winter. And in the winter, we also did, like I said, Ukraine and Belarus, and we did Siberia. Mm-hmm. I mean, nuts, sold out shows and such amazing places, dude. I love, love Russia. I love the Ukraine. I loved it so much. And the people were so great. And it's tragic to think that, who knows, like, I think you'd have to be a little crazy to get back on a plane and go to Russia after what's been going on with like basketball players. And who's to say that you put something in your bag and then it's like, you're bye forever. Yeah. I mean, that might sound crazy, but I'm not interested in that. So
yeah,
I look at tours like that. So thankful. You know what I mean? So thankful I got to play there. I played with Cornell. We played in Tel Aviv, you know, in Israel, you know, and we stayed there for a week afterwards and got to hang out. It's gorgeous, you know, and now, you know, now there's a war going on, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy how, you know, we can talk about how, like, you know, boo hoo, it's a slow time because of COVID. And meanwhile, there are these places I used to get to tour that are like, most kids won't get to ever tour there now. You know, I'm not saying Israel probably will hopefully straighten it up, but Russia, I don't know about that anytime soon. You know, it's,
yeah.
And even like I said, even Manson, when he went back after me, he went back just for a little promo run, and I was doing something else, and they didn't get to play one show. It was like major threats, and they had to split. And I was like, wow, I'm so glad my experience was nothing like that. You know, so
yeah.
So that's how. You never know, dude. You never know in this business, man. It's crazy. And I don't know, you know, like I said, I like to do a lot of different things. I really do. I like houses. I like furniture. I like antiques. I like, you know, vintage clothing. I love that stuff. I like fine art, like Warhol and real art and stuff. And so to me, that is something that I've always had a hobby. And as soon as I made any money in music, I was able to kind of like have that in my life. And that keeps me very interested and keeps me very, you know, very, and I love Los Angeles where I live here, you know, it's an incredible city with great museums and great things and great landmarks, and rock and roll, I always say, is just steeped into the ground here. You know, it's like, so like, it's like Led Zeppelin. When I think of Led Zeppelin, I think of LA more than I think of
LA,
you know? So, So, you know, there's a lot to, there's so much on here. It's such a cool place. And so anyway, I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh yeah, it yeah, for sure, man. And and when you're that reminded me of like when you told me about being with Manson overseas, like in Europe and in Russia and everything, like I don't think just from like videos like YouTube, like I don't think I've seen crazier crowds than like on like during like live shows than like European crowds and like festivals over there, and like they just seem nuts, especially with an artist like Marilyn Manson who already has a crazy stage show and all that. Like,
I'll tell you the craziest South America, you know.
Oh, is it?
Like Argentina, like Mexico, like Guadalajara, Chile, forget it. It's like, it's just, man. I mean, here's the tour we're on, which is so cool. Also, we're in South America, and the tour. This is the bands: Kiss, Slayer, all original. Minus,
oh man,
you know, minus the guitarist who at the time passed, but Lombardo, Kelly King, you know, the whole thing, original Slayer one, and then so Kiss, Slayer, Manson, Mastodon, and I forget who else. I think, or maybe that's it. So, I mean, literally, I have the schedule of the bands that are touring, and we're playing in front of, like, you know, what's it called? Like Machu Picchu or one of those, the Andes Mountains. Sorry, we're in Chile, the Andes Mountains. And it's like Kiss is going on. It's like my favorite band when I was a little kid, and I still love it. Early kid. And watching Kiss, like, I got to play a show with Kiss and, like, hang out and get a picture. I'm in, like, you know, face paint, and, you know, you get to get your picture with them after. It's just, like, things on and shit, you know, from Manson and, you know, and then Mastodon and Slayer. But Slayer, you know, forget it, dude. The crowd just, like, you've never seen a crazier mosh pit of, like, South American outdoor festivals on the dirt. It's just, like, man, just shit just goes off. And it was really cool in that with Manson, he wouldn't let anybody else, usually in Europe or South America, they would set you up in these like groups of like two bands in like a area, right?
Yeah.
Like a two story or whatever. So Manson wouldn't want to be with anybody else, and nobody else, Slayer wouldn't let anybody else be with him. So Manson and Slayer were in the same dressing rooms. You know, they had like two rooms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, forget it, Slayer, Manson, right? Like, you're not allowed in the club, you know, those guys. You're in with them and you get to hang with Slayer and Manson. And no one else is allowed in that room. They don't want to talk to you. I don't give a shit who you are, what band you're in. Slayer doesn't want to talk to you and Manson doesn't want to talk to you. But they love each other, right?
Yeah.
So a cool guy club, you know? So it was amazing to be a fly on the wall in that. And then similarly in Europe, I remember having that with Lemmy. Motorhead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Nobody could hang with Motorhead and nobody could hang with Manson. But Manson and Motorhead could hang. You know what I mean? And don't even think about trying to sneak in that dressing room because they're not going to have it. You're not welcome. You know? So it's here I am getting to hang with those crap, those legends, and then sit on the side of the stage and watch Lombardo play every night with Slayer. And, you know, it was so cool. It was so cool. But yeah, Europe is nuts. Those festivals are nuts, like Rock'em Ring or Rock'em Park. Like, you can hear the crowd just like, you know, starting. It's incredible. But South America, shit gets real. But
awesome.
Joke, I think I might have posted it. You know, it was like Kiss, Slayer, Marilyn Manson, Mastodon. It's like my tour can beat up your tour.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, it was just silly and so much fun and great to meet everybody, you know, down there. And it's just such a good vibe. So, yeah, it's pretty nice.
So, like, having been through, like, all these experiences, do you even, like, remember your, like, oh shit moment, I guess you could call it, to when you were, like, going way back, like, you're like, I'm doing this, this is happening for me, this career I've always wanted?
Yeah, that was like, Hi-Fi, Smash Mouth, you know, Rembrandt's a little bit in there, Chris Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now, like, grabbing these vines, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, holy shit. Yes, I remember that moment. I remember that moment, and I will never forget that moment. You know what I mean? And it's like, holy shit. And then the holy shit just kept going.
Yeah.
And it kept happening. But, you know, not without those moments where this breaks for 3, 4, 5 months. And during that time, you're like, I'm never going to play again. I should have been a dentist, you know? And it's like, you know, and I've been doing that for 20 plus years now. And I'm just talking about when I got here from LA, you know, there was a good chunk of time before that when I was living in Boston and working a bunch and, you know, post Nirvana, tons of college record labels, just shit that doesn't exist anymore. College radio, whole other thing where I was playing with all these great cool bands and got 3 record deals, you know, and it was amazing, you know, and it helped get me going to where I could come out and make a record in LA and look around, and then I moved here and I could get going and taught at a couple of music colleges when I first got here. And then the Hi-Fi thing kind of happened. I did a couple other little gigs. I did some auditions for cattle calls and got the jobs. And that got me more auditions and passed on a bunch of gigs that I should never have passed on. You know, like, I'm too cool. I don't need that gig. And it's like one single like band, like Lifehouse or Puddle of Mud, where I didn't bother to like get those gigs. And it's like those gigs, both those bands became huge. I don't know if, you know, I don't know if that would change my history or what, but anyways, funny how, you know, how that worked out and how it just kept going. But no, there was that moment for sure.
Yeah.
You know, like, holy shit, this is happening, man, for sure. Which is pretty cool. But I learned early on by around right after Cornell, like stuff was getting so crazy where you couldn't keep track of what was happening. So I really started, I made it so every show I would look out in the audience, find somebody way in the back, and I would watch them for like a whole minute.
Mm-hmm.
Focus, my energy on that person just for like a minute to be present in that moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that way I could kind of like focus on everything, you know what I mean? And be in that moment. So I remember, you know, I could go back to those rooms, you know, not to see that person, but to see, to just be present. Cause otherwise it's like being put in like the rapids or a wash machine. You're just like thrown around and you know, and next thing you know, it's like the tour is over and I'm looking at a tour shirt going, wait a minute, we played those like 50 Europe dates. Like, I don't, you know, so now I could look at that tour shirt and go, I remember that Helsinki show. I remember that, but I'm also the dude who doesn't stay in this hotel room. I go out and I eat the food and I meet the people and I do this, you know, I do the things and go to the museums and check out the art and I do that shit like crazy, man. I'm so glad I did. So when COVID hit, I was like, whew, I can rest. We just come back from 7-8 weeks in Europe, 2 months in Europe with Cher. We didn't stop, man. I would go all day, you know, on days off and show days. And, you know, it was great. The bass player, Ashley, was amazing. Ashley Reeve, her husband's a drummer too, Chris Reeve. She and I just were like, boom, I met my match. And we just would get up and be like, you know, breakfast, boom, we went, you know, hit museums, hit, you know, galleries, hit, you know, landmarks, hit shopping, hit the famous this, the famous that, eat to this, eat to that. Went to the garden, go and get a pretzel at, you know, October 5th, we're going, you know, my legs fall off. So it was pretty great. You know, I definitely have to say I did not, I could be a tour guide, like, you know what I mean? Greece, dude, I could take you around Athens, Greece. But I also did cruise ships playing jazz when I was in college and went overseas and did a lot of those cities. So I'd been to Israel already. I'd been to the Ukraine. I'd been all over Europe, all the islands and every port in Italy. And so I did that by the time I was like 22. So when I got back to Europe, I was like, you know, kind of, you know, I've been here, I've done this, and I'm so thankful I got to do that at a young age.
Yeah, so I play the drums too, and growing up, I think any drummer, well, any musician, all they want is that feeling to be on like the big stage, like at a place in Chile. Like, that's like seeing videos or witnessing that live from an audience standpoint. Like, it's crazy to even begin to imagine what goes through the musicians' heads, like, during, like, the whole set. Do you still get, after all this time and all the bands you've been with, do you still get that feeling that, like, it was years ago? Like, do you get, I guess, the jitters, you could say, or do you get, has it worn off? Is it,
a bunch like, of stuff with it, man. Like, this stuff is, like, all the shit that you see in movies about, like, you know, it's true. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if you do this long enough, you're going to either get eaten up and shoot up and spit out, or you're going to go through those moments where you're like, what am I doing? I can't play this show. How do I even use these things? And it was like, you're in Madison Square Garden. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then there's going to be like, I'm in Madison Square Garden. I've arrived. Let's do this. Two nights sold out. You know, I'm going to destroy you in the back row. You know, like, I'm the king, you know, like,
yeah.
It wavers for me, you know? And sometimes I will say I had to go through that part where I was like, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough to be playing on this tour. I'm a fraud. I don't belong here. You know, your mind starts going and you're like, wait a minute, dude, I've done like all this other stuff. And I did all the prep work and I went to college and got a master's degree, you know, but it's, you know, so that I would never go like, wait a minute, I'm standing outside of this audition for Smash Mouth and go like, I did everything I could do. I went to 7 years of college, I'm prepared. And yeah. I can, you know what I mean? And not be like, I forget something. No, I got this. Also, yeah. You know, but no, it, I would say I'm still so stoked with Joe Perry when we go out. It's like, it's electric. And when he comes back and he's like next to me and he's like, fuck, yes! Fuck, killer! You know, you're playing that shuffle, that blues, or that pocket, and you just see him come back and he lights up and he's screaming at me, and it's a happy screaming, like, what's going on? This is great. I mean, not that extreme, but there's moments in the last run we did, it was just like, and I'm just like, chills, you know what I mean? Because my job is to play the best I can for this guitarist who literally played in one of the best rock and roll bands, who taught me everything I know as a little boy, you know, that you were my teacher. So the best I can do is play so good for you. And if you're feeling it, it's, you know, it's like you can cut the energy with a knife, you know?
Yeah. Man.
You know, I was at my birthday party last year. Some friends threw me a surprise party, and a girl came, was from Istanbul, from Turkey. And she had only been in America for like a year, and she was really cool. She's a comedian, and she's really cool. And she asked me, she said, we're all sitting around, we're talking about things. And it was like, she said, so you're drummers and musicians? I said, yeah. She said, you're a professional drummer, I've told. Yeah. She said, what's it like to play drums? Like, what's it like, you know? And I was like, wow, that's a weird question. You know? But I said, like, you know, what I realized is really the thing is, like, when you're really in this magical moment, I think a lot of musicians can experience it, or maybe you only get it once. I've been lucky to have it a bunch of times, is literally when you're playing, you don't even feel like you're playing. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the feeling you get when you first start riding a bike and you're like, I'm flying. And you feel like you're looking down on yourself. You know what I mean? You're above and you're watching this happen while it's happening. It's like it's truly an out of body experience. If the players are that great, I am so spoiled. The last 20 years, all I play with are the best players. I'm so spoiled. I'm sure all my friends would say the same thing, that they get to do the same thing. You know, it's not always like that, you know? And now when you reach a certain level, you just get up and you're like, God, you know, everybody is just crushing. And once that happens, you can just like, you just start to like, I feel like, you know, I've reached these levels where you just play and it's so happening, you're not even doing it, you know? It's just happening, you know what I mean? So yeah, so I don't know if that helps. I'm starting to get the red battery on my phone thing. But
yeah, man, we'll finish it up here. I just want to, if you want to let people know, like, what are you up to like right now? What do you got going on?
You know, right now is, it's the spring. So like, there've been a few things that have kind of come through that have been like, okay, you know, but cool things. But I'm just like, you know, I'd rather be ready if something, you know, I'm kind of waiting, you know, I'm kind of in the Cher Joe Perry zone right now. You know, that's what I've been, which is like two artists that I'm a huge fan of. And then two artists who I'm hoping will do another run soon. So I kind of want to be available just in case if that happens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that, and then, you know, like I said, I do the Trans-Siberian as like an alternate right now until they start their third band. So that's in the fall, which is super fun and super cool to be a part of that. And other than that, man, I'm just like enjoying the downtime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's been a while, but it's like worth it to kind of hold out. But, you know, I'm also waiting for that next, you know, you never know. I'm waiting for that next Vine to come my way. And it's, that's the thing is like, as a young musician, you know, just as you're going, you just got to always say it's right around the corner. I got to keep going. I got to keep doing it and never, ever doubt it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just I remind myself. And that's why I tell students or younger guys who are just like, you know, it's never going to happen. It's like, just believe that it's just around the corner. You know, you're just around the corner. It can just be that quick where you go from no gig to you're off. And all of a sudden, you know, I can't tell you how many times I felt like I'll never be on a tour bus again. I'm done. And next thing you know, we're like flying down the road in Europe and I'm like trying to go to the bathroom and I'm like, tour bus again. Holy shit.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I remember that thought hits me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just kept happening and keeps happening. So if you're on this, you know, this path, you just got to remind yourself that gig could be right around the corner, you know, and if I could do it, you can do it. If they can do it, you can do it. If you're young or if you've been working on this for a long time, or you're in college, or you just got out of college, or you're like, what do I do? You know, that gig is just around the corner if you keep working for it. It really is, you know, because it may seem like the best gigs have come when it seems like nothing's ever going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know. That's my parting words for anybody who's going like, what do I do in this crazy industry? That's really, it is shrinking. I feel for you, but I would never tell you that it was better before and it's not good now. Because when people told me that, I got to do all the stuff I ever, ever, ever wanted to do. And I never believed for a second that it wouldn't happen, you know?
Yep. So, man. Yeah. I mean, that's great motivation there for any upcoming musician for sure, dude. And Jason, man, before we go, if you want to promote anything or like have any plugs, if you want to get the word out there on anything you got going on, go ahead.
You know, be nice to people, be kind, you know, hashtag be kind. I don't know. You know, that's what I'm for. I don't know. I already plugged my wine bar on Mirabelle in Studio City. But no, otherwise, you know, like, honestly, you know, I mean, Ludwig drums, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I see cymbals. You know, DW Hardware. I've been with those guys forever, and I'm so spoiled. We didn't get into the drum gear. We could do another one on that, or
geek out.
I want to do that. I love all those companies. I'm so excited. The instruments help, and that helps me reach that place I was talking about, where you're floating. You know, I'm so spoiled to get to play those incredible instruments from those incredible companies. So, if you're looking for the right gear, try that. You know, yeah, man,
awesome. Awesome. And yeah, Jason, whenever you want to hop on, I mean, I would love to have you on. We could chat about whatever. If you have anything going on in the future, just hit me up. And also, everyone, go follow Jason Sutter. Check out what he's doing. And also check out Rowdy Alternative and Rage Rowdy. We're on all the socials. We got a website. You know where to find us. So, everyone, thanks for listening.
It's just jasonsutter.com. You can see when I'm on the whatever, if you want to ask a question about something that we talked about. Usually I'll get back to you, but it's a weird website, as we discovered sometimes.
Yeah.
But something's going on. Anyway, it's jasonsutter.com. You can check it out.
Awesome. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. We'll see you all next time.
Cheers. Thanks, Riz Rowdy.